Welcome to Red Ice Radio. My name is Henrik Palmgren. We are coming to you over the web from the west coast of Sweden. It's very nice to have you with us today. If you're new to this program and want to check out more of what we do, go on over to our website, redicecreations.com. That's R-E-D-I-C-E, creations.com. There you can follow along in our news, our radio program, see our webcasts, video interviews, and films. We also have a members area on our website. You can sign up and get full access to all our content and all our segments of the programs and interviews that we do. And take a look at Architects of Control if you haven't already. This is the first DVD in the series that we're doing together with Michael Tesserion about mass control and the future of mankind. Go to architectsofcontrol.com, check out some of the trailers, and you can get a copy if you're interested right on that website. I also want to say thanks to everyone that we saw at the Alternative View this past weekend. We had an excellent time, and it was great seeing so many people there. I also want to thank everyone who put that whole thing together, of course. Ian Crane, his team, Keith, and his team from Edge Media. Great to see all of you. Today, we are going to spend some time talking about geomantic information systems. The geomancy of Thomas Jefferson, Bohemian Grove, the Holy Grail, alignments of certain monuments in North America and also abroad, and the idea that Thomas Jefferson used geomancy and ley lines to form a grid that many cities later has been built on. We have Kurt Lindahl with us, and he is behind the blog survivalcell.blogspot.com. And I don't know that much about Kurt's work. I've been following some of it online, and we decided to bring him on the program today to give us a kind of an outline of some of his ideas and research. We only have about an hour today, so I want to get things kicking here right away. But I also want to mention that he is currently writing a book on this topic, and we're going to talk about this later on in the program. But with that, welcome to the program, Kurt. Thank you very much for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me, and it's great to be here on your show. I listen to it all the time myself and enjoy it very much, so appreciate it.
Brilliant. You know, you started putting material on the web fairly recently. Back in April, I think you started up your blog. Why don't you tell us just a little bit about your research and give us a bit of an outline of your discoveries, if you can, Kurt.
Sure. It started, you know, last fall. I am a geographer and map drawer, and I've done some archaeology in my career also. And I've always used the township system. Thomas Jefferson invented the public land survey system. And that's a one-mile square grid that goes over the entire western United States. And it starts in Pennsylvania and west of the Appalachian Mountains. Because the rest of the country already had a separate grid, the original 13 colonies. But from reading some other material, I discovered that the township grid is a 6 by 6 mile square. That's the larger division. And Thomas Jefferson developed this in the form of a magic square that has 36 cells in it. So it's a 6 by 6 mile square. And numbered 1 to 36, the numbers all add up to 666. So I found that fascinating in a, you know, from a Masonic or Kabbalistic point of view. They use magic squares. The Sumerians were known to be fascinated also. So, I mean, this points to one of the, you know, few clues that points to Thomas Jefferson having been fascinated with the occult and Masonic ideals, whether he was a Mason or not. Hmm. So, It just out of curiosity, I already knew that the city of Indianapolis was set on the quote occult part of the grid. The top two rows, when both the numbers are added vertically, each row adds up to 13. Hmm. So I checked the location of Bohemian Grove, just, you know, on a lark, really. I'd seen the movie and read some about that, and it fit right into the same context of the grid that the city of Indianapolis did.
How did you get on the trail of Thomas Jefferson? How did he link into all of this?
Well, from researching that, there was a land ordinance in 1785 that he was the author of that initiated this township grid in use in the new territories of the West. So that started, and then I found, you know, that this the city of Indianapolis had been set on the occult part of the grid, that people considered that. And then Bohemian Grove, I found. And then the Burning Man festival or party that's in the desert is also set in this context and has other geomantic qualities also. So I began to see that people valued this. And I checked the same latitude just as a matter like a geographer would in the area of that Bohemian Grove exists at in the Washington, D.C. area. Mm. And I found that directly south, that the city limits of Washington, D.C. are a diamond, like a square that's been rotated 90 degrees. So directly under the diamond, 90 degrees, is a place called Rose Hill, Maryland. And previous in my research, I you see the rose theme popping up time and time again. And this is something, you know, that I've learned from Michael and Jordan Maxwell and, you know, the symbology involved in the monuments that are along these ley lines and everything ties directly into what they're saying about, you know, talismanic magic and the belief of people who value and create these monuments and lines still today. Hmm. So this is, see, we see this tradition started in Europe, and Thomas Jefferson apparently valued it too. I mean, along the diamond-shaped city limits of Washington, D.C., if you go to the northwestern boundary, it makes a 45-degree angle. If you draw a line that extends from that angle down the east coast to the Gulf of Mexico, both of his homes are right on the line. Hmm. His Monticello estate, which is already an accepted geomantic model. People study it, you know, feng shui people that are interested in feng shui are very interested in Monticello. And then it goes farther south to the southwest over his Poplar Forest estate, which is another Palladian structure, another occult-oriented architect that influenced him a lot.
Yeah.
It's an octagonal structure that resembles a lodge, even from plan view.
Hmm.
And they're right on the line. And then we see later people still adding to the line. The Georgia Guidestones are right on this same vector. And then another town named Monticello in Georgia. So there are people that are aware of these things. And I've just seen that no one's noted it before. And I thought it was curious that even the Georgia Guidestones were included on the line.
That's very interesting. What is your take on that, because that's let's see here, when was the Georgia Guidestone built? That's back in the 80s, I think, right?
No, it was not 1972 or 3. 70. I think it was 1972. Yeah.
Ah, hmm.
And there is a mystery around that too, that the person who, the benefactor who commissioned their construction is unknown and openly used a pseudonym, and his name was R.C. Christian.
Yes.
And a lot of people infer from that Rosicrucian, Rose Cross, possibly.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of speculation with the Georgia Guidestones. And they do indeed line up with, they are kind of an intersection of at least three different lines that I've identified so far, and possibly more.
Mm. Yeah. What about if we talk about Minneapolis a little bit more? Is that like a focal point, a central area, or is there something else in the city that you think is significant?
Yeah, Indianapolis, not Minneapolis, although Minneapolis is included on some lines also, but Indianapolis.
Okay, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, this part of the United States was already part of the country when Thomas Jefferson was the president. And this area just west of the Allegheny Mountains there, where Ohio is and Indiana and Illinois, is where he first set up this grid to be used, the township grid. And it is possible, there's no definite proof or documentation, but it seems like he had a vision to want a city there. And it's also at the same latitude of the Mason-Dixon line. So, Indianapolis seems to have been placed at that latitude intentionally, as well as within the occult part of the township grid.
Hmm. Tell us about the Mason that Dixie line you mentioned.
Yeah, the Mason-Dixon line is important in American history, and it seems to been it. Originally, it was to establish a border dispute between Pennsylvania and Maryland, and Pennsylvania at that time included what is now Delaware. So they started the line on the coast. Obviously, still at this point, surveying was done by the stars. So you have astrology coming in here. They had to have men that were skilled to, you know, read the stars and figure out their position just from that. And the place where the Mason-Dixon line began is what is now the southern border of Delaware, right on the coast of the Atlantic. Hmm. And in doing so, this line, too, was an established, valued line. There are some sources that say that this latitude was valued by the Knights Templar in Portugal after their persecution in Europe. So there's some heraldry involved with this line also in Europe. It's almost if they were extending the line over to the New World so they could have a reference point from which to measure everything else. Oh. So that was interesting. And there's lots of background to that, too. There was a dispute there just so they could get control of the area that was the datum for the entire survey. So there may be some occult significance to the Mason-Dixon line. And indeed, there are a lot of interesting monuments and locations on the Mason-Dixon line that would indicate this.
And Mason, I guess, refers to Charles Mason, so it's not actually a Freemason in that sense, but he might have had some connection there as well. I know, just reading quickly about him here, says that he spent some time at the Royal Greenwich Observatory, which is, of course, another one of these defining lines in regards to time, at least, right?
Exactly. That's a great point, and I noted that, too, that along the line, all the characters, historically, you see involved in the creation of some of these places. Some of them are outright involved with the Masons, but there's hints that they're involved in other groups that we really don't know. And there's some that I've just identified recently, and what I'm calling the Lisbon Rose Line is the same latitude as Rose Hill, Maryland, and the Bohemian Grove. And there's a park in St. Louis, Missouri called the Tower Grove Park that even occult groups today value because of its geomantic qualities, and it's set out similar to the National Mall. There's also, I forgot to mention, a recent mall of occult and sacred architecture that's been completed in Indianapolis in association with what was already there. And all of these malls are linear and seem to vector lines to different places and maybe to create angles and ley lines also. And others speculate that constellations are stellar observatories also, that you can see certain constellations rising and falling in relation to the geometric setup of the parks themselves.
Have you heard about the Nashville Bicentennial Mall?
Yes, that's exactly one of the ones I'm looking at, and I spoke to William Henry about that, and I've read a lot that he has to say, and it fits right in with what I'm finding in the other places. It seems to be, you know, that there's probably two or three different groups of people out there or more that value the geomancy on this scale.
Yeah.
And the United States is interesting because it was a chance for people to start it from scratch where there was no geomancy other than the Native American form of it.
Ah, yeah, I see what you mean. It's a kind of a chance to start over and build things anew, as it were. And a lot of Europeans came over there and saw this chance to build a whole new grid system, as you say. What do you think, why is it, this is a question that always comes up with people that talk about and research in regards to geomancy, but what is the, how should I put it, the benefit or what can be harnessed, do you think, in following these particular rules or laying up cities or certain monuments on this particular grid line? What can be achieved by that?
Well, everything I'm seeing hints that people believe that it controls. It helps to order things, maybe on a psychological level. There are people that believe, and I'm looking into this, you know, I'm slowly learning myself that, you know, like William Henry says, that some of these plazas represent stargates or possible points for interdimensional travel. Others postulate that people can actually travel from one city to another via the arrangements at these plazas. They all do seem to have some things in common with their construction, towers associated with them, certain shapes, square, four square designs.
And how do you think that that would play into? No problem. How do you think that that would play into the? Let's look at the Burning Man festival, for instance. That you know, you have a lot of people gathering there, and do you think it can generate energy as well, or boost energy into the lines in some way?
I think that that's what the people who are doing it believe. I'm not seeing any, you know, definite hard evidence that anything like that is going on, but it's been a tradition in the old world forever. I mean, even the Vatican, St. Peter's Square, is shaped the same way from plan view as the Burning Man Festival. So these domed and crescent-shaped arrays are, from what I can tell so far, viewed as being receivers of energy. Like Burning Man is placed on a line that's goes from the International Peace Garden on the border with Canada, and it goes to Bohemian Grove. So it seems that Burning Man was placed right between the two. So it's almost as if they're taking the energy from the Peace Garden, doing their will to it, or whatever they're doing to it with their geomantic structure. And then there's even an antenna-looking device from the plan view of Burning Man that seems to point it back on down the line to Bohemian Grove. So we even see groups maybe competing for or playing a game to control the mantic energy. There's talismans involved, too.
Yeah.
At the International Peace Garden, there are there's debris from the World Trade Center. I mean, they build these arrays, and then things are added and removed at later times. And this part of it, in the contemporary use of this, is kind of disturbing because,
yeah.
I mean, some of the things I've seen on the line include the FEMA coffins, of course. That's kind of a sensational example.
Huh.
They're on the line with Monticello and the Georgia Guidestone.
Sheesh, how about that?
Have you heard about the FEMA coffin phenomena?
I have, but tell us for those of us who haven't.
Yeah, it's probably totally innocent and everything. I mean, it could have normal explanations, but there's a large amount of coffin liners that could be used for coffins. People speculate. I'm sure if you go to YouTube and look at the FEMA coffin videos on there, you'll see what I'm talking about. But as I began to research this, I found that they came up right on the line that Thomas Jefferson made. Somebody later came and placed these on, and I'm thinking, wow, Georgia Guidestones, that's a monument to wise environmental and population control, and then somebody else puts the coffins there. So to me, that means I see a message there.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's true, but it's easy to start, you know, taking this stuff and interpret all kinds of things with it. But it's interesting that those happen. And they're also at the intersection of that line and another line that comes from the International Peace Garden also.
Yeah.
And that goes to Jekyll Island, Georgia, also, after it goes through that area. And that's in a historical place where supposedly our rights to the Federal Reserve were signed away, or the plan was made to take control. So there's
right.
Lots of things. Yeah, there's lots of issues here that you could interpret, you know, in the light of this talismanic magic that these people seem to be fascinated with.
Yeah, that it's so it's in relation to events, but also buildings and specific things, so to speak, that are on the agenda that are geomantically connected in one way, and this could be one of the reasons why. At least they have been so successful that is it being done in accordance to some kind of energy or some kind of beneficial for them ritual magic, which actually makes it work better. What do you think?
Certainly. I think that's what they believe, and I think they're doing it. And it'd be hard to tell. You have to really survey and look at a large area and lots of lines to see what's being added and taken away at certain places, but it seems like that's what they believe. And people postulate that there was a statue there at the World Trade Centers that was a talisman.
Yeah.
I was just reading this morning about the array of so-called occult statuary at Rockefeller Center in New York City.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Absolutely.
Yeah. So there, and then there's people like Tex Mars, who's done loads of work about all of the occult monuments all over the world. And it is, it seems it's a cross-cultural phenomena too. China has a huge tradition of this. And even the Olympic Array, the stadium there, if you look at it, go on Google Earth and look at it, it's set up like one of these Meru pillar displays that William Henry has pointed out.
Which one are the Olympics are talking about now, the recent one? Or
the recent Beijing Olympics. Even right. If you view the Olympic Park from Google Earth, it's set up similar to the National Mall in Washington, D.C., or the Array in Nashville that William Henry has pointed out. And there's many others. The Tower Grove Park in St. Louis is set up like a Meru pillar display also.
Hmm.
The linear nature of these parks also vectors lines to places that if you trace them out, they all have themed connections or talismanic connections.
Have you had time at all to look at some of the design plans for the new upcoming 2012 Olympics in London?
No, I haven't. I think that would be terribly interesting to see what they're going to do with that, because London is obviously one of the old world places where this tradition developed, you know, in England with the Neolithic, culture, Stonehenge and Avebury and places like that.
Yeah.
I'd be really interested in to see what they're going to do with that.
I know there's have been some work done in regards to at least the naming of the streets and where they would put certain types of buildings or arenas, but I don't know specifically if someone has been looking into the geometric relationship between the buildings yet, so that would definitely be interesting. Hey, I also want to ask you, Kurt, what kind of tools do you use? I guess Google Earth has been tremendously beneficial for you, but is there anything else that you use in order to track the lines or to lay the grids out in a way?
Well, Google Earth is a great product, and there's an attachment or a plugin that you can get that will show you the township grid that I'm talking about that Thomas Jefferson invented, and that's called EarthPoint Townships, and it's even free. You can download that for free. I'll do a word search for it, and that'll lay that grid over any area where it's being used. There are certain areas in the West here, for instance, where in urban areas and towns that were established during the Spanish and Mexican era here in California, for instance, have their own grid.
Yeah.
And I'm looking, trying to research more about that to see if there's any geomantic connections there, because the Spanish are definitely into the geomancy and the Masonic values too. They're a big part of all that, even though it's a Catholic-oriented country.
Mm.
So there's a lot here. And it's interesting too, that brings up another thought, that some of what I'm seeing too, it's almost like other nationalities have an interest in these things in our country also.
Yeah.
In the United States. Back to Mason and Dixon, you see most of the people establishing these things weren't, at least at first, they weren't American. I mean, my question once I started to look into Mason and Dixon is, why didn't we use an American people to do the survey?
Yeah, that's right.
And then I start studying Tower Grove Park in St. Louis, and this was established by the Linnaean Society of London, of which Charles Darwin was a member, and John Bradbury, an early explorer of the United States, Thomas Jefferson was a member, Alexander von Humboldt was a member. And it's interesting that whenever I read about any of these members of the Linnaean Society, that they were all reporting to Thomas Jefferson.
Hmm.
And they established this Tower Grove Park. It even has the imagery of their society in the park via statuary, plus the pagan religions and all of the other stuff involved with the talismanic aspects of what we're talking about here.
And I think Charles, it was mentioned here on Wikipedia that Charles Mason was connected with Benjamin Franklin, obviously, who we know had a little bit of an interesting background in regards to the Hellfire Club or Hellfire Society, you know. So there's definitely occult elements there, you know.
Yeah, well, Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin were obviously friends. They seemed to maybe value a different brand of the occult, from what I'm reading,
mm-hmm.
that is interesting. With I'm beginning to look into Benjamin Franklin too, and all his involvement in this, and with the colony of mystics in Ephrata, Pennsylvania, and of course the sensational news recently with Benjamin Franklin are the bodies found under the home in London where he used to live.
That's right. That's right. So
rather shocking.
well, exactly. I mean, this is something that pops up now and again. Of course, people have speculated if it was for, medical research or whatever it was that was being done there. But it's definitely a huge, question mark. What the heck is he doing with bodies under his floor? Yeah.
That speaks to, everybody here in America really has trouble believing, within the, quote, conspiracy press and people who are in the alternative media. I've faced some resistance just from saying that Thomas Jefferson was involved in the occult or had a values of where he valued ley lines and geomantic properties.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of a hero in America of the other side, the democracy side of things.
That's right.
But in his day, I think this is just so normal, though, that every man of means was involved some way. Not to mention scientists still had one foot in the door of being an alchemist during this era.
Yeah.
So I think even people who were, considered themselves rationalists, a la the age of Voltaire, the age of reason, and all this, still had many superstitious beliefs that we wouldn't consider today or consider rational.
I think you're right. They were more connected with, the alchemical arts, as you mentioned, the natural sciences, and also what people, in many cases, at least in the mainstream, don't realize is that many of these so-called more occult sciences have actually carried on within a certain branch of architects, scientists, and people more high up on the level, so to speak.
Yes.
And this is carried on and is still going on to this day, because again, as you mentioned and pointed out, this relates to buildings that are new as well and things that are popping up, and seems to be, when you're talking, it seems to be that someone is following also then what Thomas Jefferson was pointing out and what he was talking about in regards to his township maps and all this stuff. Do you think that, for instance, I know that you wrote about the Rockefeller Array in Williamsburg. Do you think that that's another one of these, that where they later on decided to put a building or a monument on these spots that Thomas Jefferson pointed out?
I think that's entirely possible. With Williamsburg, I'm still researching that a little more. He at least came back and refurbished Williamsburg to the way it had been. Now, Williamsburg, we know, and that whole region, it's right near Jamestown, Virginia, and this is one of the earliest colonies in America, has all these associations with Francis Bacon, and he may have been the founder of Freemasonry, the modern form of it, as well as Rosicrucianism, people say he... Not for sure, no one knows, but it's possible that he founded both of those organizations.
Sure.
And we know he had a hand in the Jamestown Company. His sister was one of the early colonists, and her husband, Bartholomew Gosnold, was one of the earliest administrators of Jamestown Colony. And other descendants of his later lived in Williamsburg, and it had lots to do with the way it was planned and everything. So. The campus of William and Mary, in conjunction with what is now Colonial Williamsburg, forms a Meru Pillar Array, just very similar to what's at the National Mall in Nashville also.
Hmm. So you mentioned Jamestown. I just recall, I think that's one of the places where actually Queen Elizabeth went when she was over in the States for her, visit. I don't know if you recall that or not, but it's just interesting.
Yes. Jamestown is just south of Williamsburg, and it's right on the James River, and it's an estuarine environment where it's a tidal type situation, and Williamsburg was higher and had better fresh water. So at first, the Jamestown colony was there for a long time, and the first capital of Virginia was Jamestown.
Yeah.
But as a fortuitous, the fresh water was there, it was a little higher and probably less mosquitoes, they moved the capital to Williamsburg there. And William and Mary was eventually moved there too soon after it was started, the College of William and Mary.
Yes. What do you make about, again, just I want to touch upon the diamond shape in regards to Maryland and Virginia, the way that that's laid out. I've always been fascinated by that. It reminds me, first of what you said about the kind of Masonic square, but it's in the shape of a diamond, and they split it almost in perfect half. Is there some kind of relationship there, or do you think that there could be some kind of... Because, again, this is an area which is highly... It's a political seat, but also a lot of important companies and corporations have moved to Maryland recently, like genetic corporations and... Also, a lot of techie corporations are there. What do you think?
I think that's entirely possible. You'll see, like, exactly on the 33rd parallel in the Long Beach, California area is the RAND Corporation. And there is evidence within each city or municipality's geomantic setup that banks and investment businesses do value the angles in association with geomantic structures. I've noted this more than once, that they like to be at right angles to dome structures.
What do you think the significance of that is?
I think that these are the people who obviously possibly run the banks are part of the groups of people who worship this way.
Yeah.
Who value the talismanic magic. They think that they're receiving some sort of energy from the transmitters. And they possibly may be. I'm not discounting the fact that all of this could be an actual phenomena. I just haven't seen or experienced it yet.
So, oh, okay.
Myself.
because I know that there is this speculation in regards to how cities are laid out, and it's being done in a form of microchip or some kind of transistor, or like a board. Basically, if you look at a computer, at a motherboard or whatnot, and then you compare it to the layout of at least many American cities, again, which goes back to this idea that the Europeans could build this later on as a kind of experiment almost, which seems to be in some way utilizing or harnessing or even potentially creating, the energetic flow of things. But what you're saying is that you haven't yet stumbled upon that there's actual evidence for that. It's more of an occult idea or philosophy, do you think, at this point then?
Just for my research, I've talked to plenty of people who insist that they're portals to other dimensions, and that's what they're designed as. Even historically, you can look at Sumerian stone carvings and the seals that they had rolled out in the clay and things like that. And it looks like there's flying objects with an array of towers there or tower-like objects that match some of the arrays perfectly. I mean, the one here in Northern California that I've looked at, a small town, Chico, has a textbook array of things.
Hmm.
For such a small place, it has all of the elements of a large city. The founder of the town was involved with the Linnaean Society that I mentioned earlier, back in the 1850s. And John Hooker, one of the prominent members of the Linnaean Society, visited here and had a large oak tree named for him here in town. So it's interesting also that Chico sits exactly on the Mason-Dixon line.
How about that?
The diamond of the street plan here, the actual bottom of the diamond, the Mason-Dixon line, actually transects the bottom of the block that composes the bottom of the diamond perfectly. Exact latitude of the Mason-Dixon line.
I was just interested because before I'm reading a little bit from your post here in regards to Chico in California. And again, this comes up in regards to the Lisbon line. But that's Lisbon in the U.S., obviously, not Lisbon in Portugal, in Europe, right?
No. That line was actually, I named that line because it extended from the Lisbon area and the mid-38th parallel. And it seems to be a line of importance because the same latitude of the southern part of the Mason-Dixon line where they began the survey is that latitude. And then the Rose Hill, Maryland, which seems to be the basal datum for Washington, D.C. I didn't mention that before.
Mm-hmm.
It possibly might be the high point from which they shot in the boundaries of Washington, D.C.
Mm.
And this is the same latitude that Bohemian Grove is on.
There you go.
So, and the Tower Grove Park in St. Louis is on that latitude. Cahokia Mounds, which is a large Native American mound complex near St. Louis, is on that line also.
Yeah.
So there's many interesting things on the what I'm calling the Lisbon Rose Line. And Lisbon itself, Portugal, I mean, let me speak to the Grail lore here for a minute.
Yeah.
The Portugal, some people interpret that name as being Port of Grail. There is lots of Templar lore that in the 14th century, after the Templars were persecuted in Europe, that many of them took refuge in Portugal. And there's lots of Templar lore there too in Spain and Portugal. And it just seemed interesting that that line also, if you follow it through Europe, it crosses all of the temples in Greece and Italy that are venerated as part of this triad of deities that are being worshipped now in these monuments. So it all ties to the beginning of Christianity. But where the Grail lore comes from is when I started to examine Rose Hill, Maryland, as where the boundaries of D.C. may have been shot in from, I saw that you could form a pyramid using the city limits of Washington, D.C. and the Lisbon Rose Line. So Thomas Jefferson, this is him again. He was the one who was responsible for the placement of the city limits of Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
He also had a limited hand in the street plan, but he was more responsible for the diamond-shaped city limits. So after I began to study and think that he was into geomancy, that I began to vector lines based on that. And I noticed that the plan of it started to remind me of the Da Vinci Code, to be frankly. I see a pyramid with Rose Hill where the chamber is, the hidden chamber underneath. And then I do some more research and I do find a legend, a local lore of the Holy Grail being brought to Maryland by Captain John Smith, who is the one who brought the colonists to Jamestown.
There
and this
go.
Ties in again with the Francis Bacon and the early Masonic lore. There's no proof that this is true. It is just a legend.
Sure.
But then I began to examine this in the light of Thomas Jefferson having a plan for cities in the West where people are later building sacred monuments using sacred geometry. So it's almost as if Thomas Jefferson left a metaphorical Holy Grail of science for people in these monuments, like in Nashville, St. Louis, and Indianapolis.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I actually want to go back to the Lisbon a little bit again, because I don't know if you're familiar with that court. We had the Lisbon Treaty signed. This is the European Constitution pretty much signed at this spot, or at least the leaders, you know, agreed that this is the signing is going to take place here. And it's regarded as pretty much the preeminent symbol of Portugal's history as the powerhouse of European exploration. And they did had photo shoots outside of Geronimo's monastery. It's a huge complex that was started in 1502 by King Manuel the First, in commemoration of Vasco da Gama, and even Henry the Navigator set out from there. So it's a kind of a relationship between Europe and the American continent as well, actually, if you look at Lisbon.
Yes, and in the context of the politics of today, that could be considered a talisman also.
That's absolutely right.
It's interesting. It fits in with the whole theory of what we're saying here. I did, in the back of my mind, hear that on the news, but I hadn't made the connection. That's really interesting.
It's very, very interesting.
That is.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I'm sorry.
No, I just wanted to check with you a little bit more here in regards to your book, of course, and how that is coming along. I guess you've been publishing a lot of these articles on your website, survivalcell.blogspot.com, where people can go to check out some of this material, and also you have a lot of pictures, a few videos and so forth up there. But you're planning to put this together and compile a book, isn't that right?
Yes, that's true. I just about through laying it out myself, I've published lots of technical reports and things like that. So luckily, I've gained some skills in doing laying things out myself, and I'm just about through it. It's kind of tough to know where to end because it keeps leaving other places. I mean, this morning I just went to the Pyramid of the Sun at Teotihuacan in near Mexico City, and drew some lines using the facets of that pyramid, and one of them led right to the pyramid building in Sacramento, California.
Hmm. Interesting.
And yeah, and that's another thing I wanted to bring up, or in the book. The book will be coming out probably later this summer. I'm sorry to keep getting distracted.
No worries.
I'm through writing it now, unless I find something so spectacular out that I can't resist adding it. I'm up to about 250 pages and another 50 pages of illustrations. And so I think I'm going to cut it off there and just make an additional volume, just a sequel, if, so to speak.
Mm. And you mentioned that I want to quickly run that by you. The pyramid in Sacramento, I hadn't heard about that, but I just Googled it, and it looks exactly like one of the Mexican pyramids, and I think is that in Teotihuacan as well then? Or
yeah, it kind of looks like a stepped pyramid, which is the one at Teotihuacan is a little bit different looking than that one, but it's very similar to the cultural type of pyramids that are in Central America.
Very
and that also that pyramid is right, the capital in Sacramento has a Meru staff array also that vectors a line, and that pyramid is part of it. It's right in line with the capital and everything. And interestingly enough, the Sacramento capital, if you vector a line from there, it goes right to the very large array radio telescopes in New Mexico, which are also on some other lines also. And I'm seeing that even modern scientists, scientists traditionally adopted this form of religion, too, as a form of protest.
Mm-hmm.
During the Age of Reason and the French Revolution, we see intellectuals like the early founding of America adopting these types of, Ishtar worship or Luciferianism.
Yeah.
As a form of protest, possibly. So I've seen that on the same latitude as Baalbek,
yes.
Lebanon, which is a famous site, that's exactly on the 34th parallel, Baalbek is.
Mm-hmm.
Here in the United States, the Very Large Array is also right on the 34th. The southern end of it is exactly on the 34th. The Jet Propulsion Laboratory is also on the 34th almost perfectly, and the Georgia Guidestones.
Hmm. It's very, very interesting.
We're seeing values here, they're from different groups, it seems. There are different groups of people that think that these things actually do something.
And again, you briefly talked about this before, but again, in regards to this being an occult science and whatnot, do you think that it's all gobbledygook, or do you think that there's actually something to it, though? Do you get a general idea or feeling when you're working so closely with this and researching that, shit, there actually must be something to it, or otherwise they wouldn't have been spending all this time and actually making it or manifesting it? What do you think, Kurt?
Yes, I do, and it's kind of scary. I mean, from a rational point of view, I've never been overly religious in my life or anything. I believe in God and have faith. But yeah, this is startling. This is something that's been hidden. A lot of the people you know and talk to, obviously, this kind of thing is normal. But to the general public, this would be shocking.
That's right. Yeah.
Much less, like we said, that it's all in the public domain, and it's almost like religious imagery that's mostly being paid for by the public. So that's an issue, too. And really, when you really examine the faith that's driving all of this, or the religion, it seems to be based on a small group of people manipulating a larger group of people, or taking something from them, or trying to give them something.
Yes.
So that kind of seems not fair and not good for everybody too, just on the ethical basis from which they're viewing the world.
That's right.
So that's a big issue, and it is scary if there's demons doing interdimensional travel in my town.
kind of spooky, yeah.
Yeah, that's and you're right. To the degree that these folks seem to value all of this, there must be something to it.
Yeah. Well, that's
Nikola Tesla, the Tesla connection. Have you ever examined that?
Heard about it briefly, but tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, well, a lot of the people who believe in ley lines and earth energies believe that there's an actual electrical energy that can be transmitted.
Yeah.
And that could affect people somehow. I mean, the atmosphere of the earth resonates at the same frequency as the human mind, so I've read. I'm not an expert on that. And this speaks to some people's belief that this whole grid is a byproduct or a component of the HARP system.
Yes.
Have
you found that HARP is on any particular line as well?
No, I need to check HARP. I don't know where HARP is. I know there's more than one location that they have that.
Mm.
And I know there's one in Alaska, but I did remember seeing a map in my study somewhere that showed six or seven different locations.
Wow, there you go.
Yeah, so I'll check that. That's a good. There's so much to check.
Absolutely. Well, you have a whole planet to check, pretty much. You know, again,
yeah, exactly. I've just started with it.
But I guess
old world, really. Yeah, I've just started looking at the pyramids, and the most amazing thing there is the Great Pyramid, the northwestern vector. If you draw a line that matches, if you look at the pyramid from plan view, it's a square with an X.
Mm-hmm.
Follow the line that goes to the northwest and draw a line that goes exactly that. It's at 45 degrees because the pyramids are oriented perfectly north to south. Mm. It matches. There's a hexagonal structure at Baalbek. And it matches one of the facets of that structure almost perfectly.
Really? No.
We're talking two of the most lauded, oldest structures in the world.
Yeah.
That almost exact have elements to them that match perfectly. I think it's almost 700 miles.
Hmm.
I just sent you some pictures on the email, by the way, that illustrate that. I was just sending you an email before you called me.
Wonderful. Well, we'll definitely get that up as well on our website so people can follow along in this. And I think, Kurt, this would be a good time to round things up for now. What I want to say, though, is that we have to have you back, obviously, on the program to talk more about this. We've kind of just briefly given people a kind of general idea here, and there's just so much more to talk about. But before we do round up, I want to ask you a little bit again about your book here. You have a focus a little bit, for now at least, on North America, and are you going to have illustrations in the book as well so people can follow along?
Yes, that's one of the things that slowed me down a little bit. I'm drawing a whole package of maps and everything that just show what I'm talking about. Some of the imagery I'm using from Google Earth is kind of confusing because of the colors and everything else that's involved. Sometimes it's easier just to draw an outline of Egypt and show where the pyramid is and where Baalbek is and draw a line.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Some of that will be, I'm going to have the book for sale within the next month on my blog. And I'll be sure to send you a copy.
Oh, beautiful. Thanks. And will you have, it available through your website so people can click through from there and get a copy?
Yeah, I'm gonna try to have it available on all the major outlets too. It will be available on my website, my blog, and by the way, I also have a YouTube channel that's Survival Cell also with some crudely made videos on there. I'm trying to be a video producer a little bit, but they kind of display what I'm talking about a little, even if they're not overproduced, that they show maps and things like that give you a better idea. And that's one of the problems I've had with my material is it's hard to visualize unless you know about maps or you have one right in front of you. Reading about the lines and the angles and stuff, unless you can see it illustrated. So
absolutely,
I'm spending a lot of time working on the illustrations.
Beautiful. And again, very good to have some videos up on YouTube again. As you said, that always helps to explain it more graphically, so to speak. But mention your blog again then, so people know where to go and keep an eye out for the upcoming book.
Yeah, certainly. My blog is survivalcell.blogspot.com. And I'll have an ad up that'll let you order the book here within 3 weeks or so. About half the book is on the blog. There's a lot of stuff I've saved kind of to try to help me sell the book a little bit. I'm not trying to make a fortune here or anything. What drove me to do this was the stuff I found out about the Thomas Jefferson's home being aligned. I did some research and I haven't found that noted before, and I just thought it was terribly interesting, you know. Yeah. that one of the grandfathers, fathers of the United States, valued these types of things.
Absolutely. And you pretty much took it from there then, I guess.
Yeah, and it just snowballed into all of this other discovery. And like I said, nice people like Michael Tessarion and Jordan Maxwell, and of course the Alex Jones Show, they expose lots of things that we've never seen before, as well as you and your show. Thank you again. You guys are great. I listen to you all the time.
Thanks, Kurt.
It's just revealing. It's great to see the other side of things.
Absolutely, and that's what it's all about here. And again, that's why, you know, we want to have you back on the program, and again, and encourage people to do get a copy of the book once it's out, because that's going to utilize you to continue your research, and that's very important as well, you know. So keep up the great work, Kurt, and I'm really looking forward to having you back pretty soon here on the program and dive even deeper into some of these areas that we didn't have time for here today.
Certainly, anytime. You just contact me. I'd love to talk to you about it. It's great to talk to somebody about this. It's been kind of therapeutic for me.
very good.
Some people, you try to tell them about this and they just don't want to hear it. So,
well, that's true.
Have a sympathetic ear.
Exactly. Well, you got to find the audience, as it were. So that's the web is a great way to reach out to people who are interested. And there is a lot, and there is, you know, more coming, as it were. So this is the work that we need to find out about. So it's really, really important that you keep it up, Kurt.
All right. Well, thank you. I'm definitely keeping it up. I'm kind of obsessed with it. Thank
you. Sounds good. Okay. Well, stay with us, Kurt. I'm going to round things up here for this time. Again, we definitely want to have you back. Again, the blog is survivalcell.blogspot.com. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll be back soon again. We will talk to you more then. So until then, take good care. Check out the website, redicecreations.com. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye. We are going to be abroad over the next few weeks to do some filming for upcoming projects, and we will take a week or so off from the radio show. But when we return, we're going to have Russ Baker with us talking about his book, The Family of Secrets, about the Bush dynasty. Tom Reagan will join us talking about his book, Empty Cages, about animal rights. We are also going to do a few webcasts, one with Daniel Tatman, and we'll continue with part 3 of our Brotherhood of Death series, together with Michael Tessarion. And we also have a few important video interviews, one with Brian Gerrish that we did over in London about common purpose and neurolinguistic programming, and with Adrian Gilbert about the Invisible College. So that's Red Ice Radio for this time. Nice to have you with us. Great job, Fredrik, who's behind the controls, and Elizabeth, our contributing news editor, will be keeping the news updated while we are gone. In the meantime, check out our radio archive and go back to some of the programs that you might have missed. And if you aren't already a member, consider signing up for a membership and tune in to some of the gems that we have waiting for you in our archive. Take good care, and we will talk more soon. Bye-bye.